seen it. Now it's time to talk about it. We are talking about Spider-Man Across the Multiverse, right? Spider-Verse. Oh my God, Jesus. Shot dead already. Just stumbled horribly. I am Pete, and I am from Comic Books Transformed, where we talk about the comic books that have been adapted into your favorite movies and TV shows. And over there is my good friend, and he is always dressed for the occasion, Brian Corsair. What kind of Spider-Man are you rocking today?
This is the only Spider-Man shirt I have left, actually.
Oh, okay.
It's just Spider-Man kneeling and being upset over a box of broken Uncle Ben's rice.
Oh, that is awesome. Yes, well, I'm glad that you have an Uncle Ben-themed shirt, because that's going to be a talking point for today as we talk about Across the Spider-Verse. We just saw the movie, and we're going to discuss it. It's going to be spoiler-filled. We're also going to rank Across the Spider-Verse against other Spider-Man movies, including the Venom movies. Not Morbius yet. And I'm sure that we'll go into detail about the cameos and stuff. So, right off the bat, Brian, when you went into this movie, did you have that moment that we've discussed before where you felt like you were in good hands, where you're like, okay, I know I'm going to enjoy this movie?
I'm not sure, but I definitely noticed the Comics Authority thing, like you mentioned before. So it definitely made me think of you when I saw it again.
For this, right, I actually had that moment right away. Like, when an Into the Spider-Verse starts, it has a sort of like drum beat, and it's this very kind of fast-paced, almost like jazz kind of speed right away with the with the music. This had this like much more slow and almost kind of ominous music playing. It was like, and just like that slow music and the cool effects on the logos for each of the companies, I was like, oh, this is going to be good. I can already tell. And I have to say, so we're going to jump into spoilers right away, that a good portion of the beginning of the movie really feels like a Spider-Gwen movie, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think what this is one of the stronger points of the movie is that the increased focus on Spider-Gwen. Spider-Woman, as they call her in this universe, or Ghost Spider, as she's now referred to in the comics.
Yeah. I have no problem with that. You know me, I'm just like you, huge Hailee Steinfeld fan. Do you think that people appreciate that she is, it's kind of like it's both their stories, Miles and her story, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, now especially I would. The first movie, I would say it's purely Miles' story. This movie solidifies this as a joint Miles and Gwen movie, honestly.
Yeah. I was actually like thinking how like long they focus on her. I was like, is this like 10 minutes?
It's like 10, 15 minutes before we even get the title.
Yeah.
and that's all Gwen, which is great.
Mm-hmm. So that is going to bring me to essentially the one criticism I have for this movie. I have one criticism. I kind of wanted to get it out of the way right away. I just kind of feel like it's too long. And I don't think that like any scenes need to be pulled out necessarily. I just think that it just needs to be trimmed.
So the one thing I want to say that I commented about my theater going experience is that, yes, the movie feels long. And when it ends, it like the entire theater was incredibly frustrated. They were like angry. I normally don't go see movies on Friday nights. I'm usually like a weekend matinee kind of person, but because of my son's sports activities, that's a little harder to do recently. So we went on a Friday night. We normally like the only other movie we've seen recently was Guardians. That was a Thursday night. It was a little different. It was a little calmer. This was like nuts. People were angry. And I think it's because they sat through 2 hours and 16 minutes of a movie without an actual conclusion.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I don't think anything is really wasted anywhere. Mm-hmm. Nothing really feels excessive. Mm-hmm. But to go that long, that's not true. I think the ending sequence is drawn out too much.
Mm-hmm.
So after Miles escapes and, before they give you the plot twist, that whole sequence is way too long.
Yeah.
It feels drawn out and gratuitous to the point where I can understand the frustration of you're seeing that much after that. If they would have trimmed that down, that section down, I think it would have been a little more palatable.
Yeah.
Maybe. Because it didn't feel like it was going to end there.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. The end also feels very much like kind of like Back to the Future 2. Like, and I felt like two things. I felt like the Matrix Reloaded and the Back to the Future 2.
I heard someone else say Matrix Reloaded, and it feels a lot like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, because it's one of those, it's like one of those where it's like, okay. We're jumping right to the ending. It's funny because I want to talk about the beginning and how it the excessiveness cuts in right away, right? And I wanted to address that. But since we're talking about the ending, whenever people talk about a second movie and how great a second movie can be, they always talk about The Empire Strikes Back. And they always say how The Empire Strikes Back ends on a cliffhanger. But the cliffhanger for The Empire Strikes Back is far less severe than the cliffhanger of this and those other two movies that I just mentioned. Go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm talking too much.
Wow. Matrix Reloaded, where they ended that. I don't know. I don't know about that. But you knew when that was coming. And I think that was pretty quickly after. Or was it a year? I don't remember.
I think Matrix Revolutions is less than a year, but at the very most, 1 year after Matrix Reloaded.
So I've heard that, the rumor, I mean, it's supposed to be released in March of next year or May of next year, something like that. Mm-hmm. But I've also heard a lot of things how, like, I saw a quote from Hailee Steinfeld that she hasn't even recorded a line yet. And generally speaking, with animated movies, they record the audio before it's animated so they can sync the lips and everything like that. Mm. And the other really, really bad thing to note is that, one of the more intense action scenes in this, in the movie features a lot of extra characters. And that scene apparently took 4 years to animate.
Holy shit.
I have to read a little more on the context of that. I'm sure it wasn't like 4 constant years of just someone working on that scene or something like that. Or there's probably some context I'm lacking there. But just the fact that, hearing those two things and putting it together, it's like, can this actually come out, in less than a year?
So it's almost like you had two conflicting points there, right? Because the Hailee Steinfeld point is like, oh, they definitely couldn't do it. But to address the second point you made, I feel like if they were making them concurrently, right? Like, if they were making this movie and the next one at the same time, then I think they're good to go, right? But if it's like they haven't even done any of the voice recordings yet, then...
That's an excellent point. Maybe they kind of did it all at once, and they've been working on it, and they only released kind of half of it so far, and they're just finishing up everything.
Yeah.
And that could be it. Oh, yeah, that's actually a great point.
Right, because all the examples I listed, like Back to the Future Part 2 and The Matrix Reloaded, they already had been working on the other films and were ready to release them.
Yeah.
And also like The Lord of the Rings, right, with like the Two Towers and The Return of the King. But that's what this felt like at the very end. And I understand audiences being frustrated, being like, oh, come on, this doesn't end. I know that when I went to go see it, people were like, what? What the hell? But I've also seen like on Twitter and stuff, people are like, hey, I would go watch the next one like right away. I would go watch this for another 2 hours.
I don't doubt that any person in that theater wouldn't sit through another 2 hours immediately right after.
Yeah. So then with that being said, let's kind of talk about like the trimming and let's talk about if we liked it or not. See, the thing is, guys, is that me and Brian haven't talked about this movie at all. So I'm making the assumption that Brian liked this movie.
Yes, I did.
Okay. So then let's just talk about the trimming real quick before we talk about what we liked. So with that first sequence, right, there's that sequence where we see Spider-Gwen's life and we see her relationship with her father. Then she goes and fights this sort of like Renaissance era vulture. And his art style is really interesting too. Like she even kind of says he looks like a Da Vinci drawing or whatever, a tapestry.
Yes.
She's fighting him. When they're fighting, we get to see Spider-Woman and we see Spider-Man 2099, and there's some like amazing, amazing images. And it's just like the Transformers, the movie from 1986, where like the music, everything's just like synced up perfectly, and you get those goosebump feelings. But with that being said, it still feels like it's like, okay, this is going on a little too long. Like, cut out a little bit of dialogue, trim a little bit of this, like, just get to the point quicker.
I disagree with that. I think I think that that opening sequence was surprising and well-earned, and I think you need that to establish the her as a central, more of a central character than previously thought.
Yeah.
So I think that totally works there. It exposes you to, you know, the group. It gives you more of a backstory on Gwen. I mean, they don't give her a backstory other than, you know, she lost Peter in her universe. That's really the only thing they gave you. I mean, we know about it because we read the comics about it. But for the movie going audiences that maybe don't read the comics, they just see her in that movie and that's all they know. So I think that's a great summary of her origin, really, I think. And her, yeah. And what her life is like in her world. So I think that whole sequence was very needed in terms of runtime, and I wouldn't cut anything there.
Okay. Oh. Okay. So we're on the same page. Like everything that's just exclusively Gwen Stacy and showing her dad and her band, great stuff, right? Just with that scene where they're fighting the Vulture, just the actual fight with the Vulture seems to go on a little too long.
Well, they need to establish the new characters there in a positive light first.
Okay.
Because they essentially establish them in a negative light the next time we see them, you know?
Right.
That's so a good they point. They kind of have to throw that up in the air there just to so that you're not thinking these are flat-out villains, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. And they're sort of showing that they're competent, too, because they're kind of taking care of this big issue, and there's a lot of chaos going on, and they're sort of being real cool about it, right?
Yeah. They're setting up the dilemma of the movie, you know, is with what things were caused by the events of the first movie and the Kingpin Super Collider and Miles' universe.
All right, man. You freaking swayed me. You got a point there, right? so then let's talk about what we love about this movie. Okay, so right away, the different art styles for the different worlds. Just so great. And just what they do in Gwen's world alone is so fucking good.
Yeah. I even feel like Miles is Miles even looks a little different, I think, than the animation in the first movie.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Not drastically, but a little bit. Like it felt a little different.
Yeah. I mean, it's like one of those things where it's just like it's a later movie. And so they've had time to develop things, flesh things out, do a better job this time around. Her world is just, it's great. It's got this sort of like watercolor feel to it. And the background changes when the emotion in the scene changes. So good.
Yeah. And I mean, this is something that I wanted to bring up at some point. So maybe now's the best time to do it anyway. But you notice a lot of, you know, light blue and pink undertones.
Yes.
In a lot of those background scenes. And yes. There's a lot of like discussion on Twitter is if, I mean, I don't know if it's a discussion. People are just seeing that Gwen is kind of like a trans allegory here, if not trans herself.
Yeah.
At this point, with those color palettes kind of match the trans flag. There's a Protect Trans Kids poster in her room, and there's a maybe this is a little debatable, but it appears to be a trans flag above Captain Stacy's badge. So, and then the whole thing about is that she doesn't want to come out to her dad, essentially.
Yes.
And Spider-Woman, which is kind of like an allegory. I mean, I'm assuming that if he's wearing a flag and he has the poster, that may already be known by the characters, at least.
Yeah.
But that allegory is that she's afraid to come out to her parent, you know? And I think that's valid. And I always think back to there's a quote that floats around from Mark Hamill about Luke Skywalker. Like somebody asked him if he thought Luke Skywalker was gay. And then his response was, if you think he is, then he is to you. That's fine. That's great. So I think that's a really great way to look at this. I haven't seen people complaining about that, which I was kind of expect.
Yes.
To have, because a lot of people feel like that content like that is being kind of forced down their throats. But
yes.
it's just showing that, you know, these things exist, they're visible and we can see them. And that's what people want those, you know, that those groups want.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. You're saying that like, you didn't see a lot of people complaining about this possible allegory in this movie. And it's funny because I know that like the discourse I've seen about this movie is that, you know, people feel like just the fact that Spider-Man is Miles Morales, a African Latino character, like that in itself is controversial. And there are people that like, are saying that this movie's going to bomb, and it clearly did not bomb. It's like fucking doing gangbusters, right?
I'll be surprised if anything makes more than that opening weekend the rest of the year.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And so, like, you know, I sometimes reference the Critical Drinker on here, and he's sort of this one that is like, he's like real anti-woke and just making fun of just, you know, the message and stuff like that in his videos. And then there's like Movie Bob, who is very liberal. And I saw the two of them kind of interacting on Twitter. And what's his face? The Critical Drinker was saying that Peter B. Parker is such kind of like a lame character in this movie. He's sort of this like stumbling, bumbling dad. And he's supposed to kind of be a stand-in for the original Peter Parker Spider-Man. And then like Movie Bob basically said, this is a movie where there's a car Spider-Man and his name is like Peter, you know?
Yeah. There's also a T-Rex and all kinds of other crazy things.
Right. And so I just, the whole reason why I went off on that little tangent is because I feel like there is a portion of the YouTube community and just Twitter and stuff too, where they know that they're going to get a response just by complaining about things. And, like complaining about this new Gwen thing that you're talking about, I could see them really aiming at that.
Yeah, but I actually haven't seen it. All I've seen is people just saying that it exists and is real, and they're cheering for it. So which is a nice change. But I don't know if maybe it's subtle enough that other people aren't noticing it, and I haven't really commented on it yet.
Yeah, it's weird how like some things they get upset about right away, and then other things they kind of let slide. You know?
Well, yeah. This. Like I said, it's subtle. It's not completely in your face. They don't say it. It's not explicit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think it's very obviously heavily implied that it could be, you know?
Yeah.
And it could work like that.
Yeah. I personally love that. That was a sort of a growing up moment for me as a kid, was being like, oh, wait a minute. This is like an allegory for something in life. When I was like, oh, this represents this in a comic, like especially like the X-Men, obviously. They always represent the outsider. Yeah. And so I like it much more when it's not like beating you over the head with it, but when it's like a subtle thing, but it could be just as powerful.
Yeah. And the kind of open to interpretation is what I really like. It's just like, if you want to see it, it's there. And if you don't, you don't, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm glad that you brought that up. And then like, in that world, and like that story with her dad, like, first off, her dad was played by Shea Whigham, who I love him. You know, there's that thing on Twitter where it's like, who is in a movie that automatically them being in it elevates the movie? Shea Whigham is like that for me. I love him so much.
Well, I don't know. I think I know him.
I think we've already had this conversation, but like,
oh no.
Do you remember in Kong Skull Island, there's the guy that like opens up the grenades and he gets like, okay, all right. Come on. He's in a lot of HBO things that me and Sherry watch. He's fucking awesome. But
okay.
Anyway, they added like some new effects in this movie that weren't in the original Spider-Verse. And like one of the things I really liked was that you would see a character looking at a reflective surface, and the reflective surface would have like their Spider-Man mask, or if it was like the Spider-Man person, it would have their regular face. And they did that with Gwen a lot. And then they also had this thing where like a spider person would be like swinging through the city, and then like whoever they were thinking about was like on the windows. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, you know, we had it for like Miles's uncle, and we had it with like, you know, Miles thinking about Gwen and Gwen thinking about Miles. I just love those little subtle, because that's very much like a comic book. Like,
oh yeah, and just the first point too, with the half face and the half mask thing. It's a very comic book thing too.
Right, and it's just the idea of like, use as much as you can from visual storytelling. Like, don't just make it this static real world thing. Like, be as artistic as you can.
Yeah, and that's the strength of animation, is you can do things like that, you know?
Right. It's funny because like in our video, we're referencing all these different YouTube channels and Twitter handles and stuff. But I want to bring up Mr. Sunday too, because he reviewed this, James and Mason. And they were saying how like this is sort of a wake-up call for Disney, because Disney kind of has this very static kind of formula that their movies look a certain way. And this movie's just like light years ahead.
Yeah. I mean, it quite literally oozes style. I mean,
yeah.
You can't put it any other way, but yeah, now that you mention that, it's like, yeah, you compare this to any, you know, Disney movie, animated movie from the last like 10 years. You know, even if you compare it against something that's sort of similar, like Wreck-It Ralph or something like that, this is blows it out of the water.
Oh, yeah. Not even the same league, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, come on. Tell me some more stuff that you loved. I want to know. I want to stop talking so much. You tell me.
Oh, God. What else did I love? I loved just everything about Miles and just that it's his story and his choice and what he wants to do. I loved that how influenced he was by his adventures in the first movie. Like, you know, he originally was so focused on art in the first movie, but in this, like, he's like talking about like physics and everything like that, which I feel like is kind of impressed upon him from, you know, the other characters and his desire to go meet up with them again.
Right.
And at the same time, it makes that crushing moment later on when he realizes that they could have come to visit him earlier and they hadn't, like, hurt so much more. What else? I mean, it just, I liked seeing all the other Spider people. I think sometimes the cameos were like, just like, yeah, okay, whatever. You know, you do see some previous footage of Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, things like that. There was a nice little cameo of Donald Glover.
Yes.
Supposedly the actual MCU Aaron Davis.
Yeah.
Which was kind of cool. That was nice to see. You hear J. Jonah Jameson everywhere. What else? I really loved, I was afraid I wasn't going to like the changes they made to Spider-Man India. I thought when I first saw the costume, I'm like, oh, why don't they make it look like the comic, which essentially is just a Spider-Man costume with like big white baggy pants.
Right.
Honestly, I really loved that character, Spider-Man India. And I really loved, Spider-Punk. I thought
that
was like a standout to me. Like, he was great.
Oh, yes. And then
when I found out later on, it was Daniel Kaluuya.
Who's
been in a bunch of things lately, I guess.
Yeah.
And he was a fantastic addition, probably a standout for me in terms of other characters, you know, that aren't, you know, ones we previously knew. And then finally, I liked how it was goofy. In the beginning, he was kind of like a screw up. And I loved how they tied in his origin with the events of the first movie. That the whole, they intertwined everything in this movie so well with the first one.
Yes.
And I really appreciated that. And then especially as the movie goes on with the spot and he kind of disappears for a while, just they made him real fucking creepy.
Yes.
By the end of the movie, just like how I felt, it was almost like a little bit more intense version of how I felt about Prowler from the first movie. I really appreciate that they brought that kind of like psychotic horrorish tone to it. You know, and it's funny. It's like I kept thinking, like, wow, they made the spot terrifying.
Yeah.
And then I think to like Venom and like Carnage. I'm like, wow, they just really fucked up that movie.
Tell me about it.
That was how Carnage should have been done, I think. Something like that, you know?
I agree. I mean, the Spot is kind of a goofy character in the comics, and in this, by adding him to Miles's origin, it gives him so much more urgency, like you said. And then they kind of did the thing like they did with Domino, where it's like the design is the inverse of the comic, right? Because like, he starts out where he looks like the comic, where he's white with black spots. But then by the end of the movie, he's like black with like a little bit of white. And, you know, he's almost like his own art style to himself at the very end of the movie, too.
Yes.
There is something that we have to say about the fact that like him and Miles are like intertwined like that. You know, they go back to the scene of the Kingpin's collider machine and the dad is there. And it's kind of a little bit of foreshadowing of his possible death. And then you have the Spot monologuing, basically explaining how like Miles and him are connected. And they even reference the fact that Miles threw a bagel at his head in the first movie.
Yeah. They perfectly intertwined everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, when they mentioned that the spider bit Miles and he was the one that like brought that spider into the world, I was like, oh, they're calling back to that spider. That's going to have some kind of effect. That's going to be important. And then I wish I had made that connection when they were talking about like the DNA and they're like, oh, we're going to send you back based on your DNA to the world you're supposed to go to. But I think that there's something eventually Miguel, like Spider-Man 2099, has this line where he says, "You are the first anomaly. You're the main anomaly because you're the spider from this other world mixed with Miles Morales." And I think that that's such an interesting concept because, like, literally in his body, like, who he is an anomaly.
Yeah, I really like that. And the idea that the Universe 42 doesn't have a Spider-Man.
Yes.
And then, you know, that his Peter died because the spider bit him. And I guess there can only be one Spider-Man in the universe, which is a nice callback to the comic and all the spider totem stuff, mm-hmm. which they don't really touch upon in this at all. Like these movies are very different from what happens in the comic of Spider-Man.
Yes. Yes.
But it was a nice kind of like little thematic callback, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, boy, we're jumping all over the fucking map here today, but that's okay. The movie's kind of like that, right?
Yeah.
But what I was going to say was that I almost think that like there's a multiverse that's just the comic book multiverse, and then there's like a multiverse that's essentially like video games and cartoons and movies, you know, live action movies and animated movies, and that's what this is.
Wait, say that again.
Okay. I will take us back to Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness for a second. In that one, his girlfriend, whatever the fuck her name is, she says, you know, that you come from Earth 616. In this movie, Miguel says, I don't want to talk about Doctor Strange and the Peter Parker, you know, and he says Earth 199999 or whatever. So my whole thought is that they're going to say essentially there's different multiverses, and that there's like the comic book one, which is the one that we know very well. And then there's this sort of multiverse that has all these sort of animated things, like and live action and video games.
I am going to say that I think that was just a fuck up. They previously do reference the MCU as being Earth 199999, whatever, how many ever nines there is.
Yeah.
I remember the actress that played Miss Marvel commenting on that.
Right.
So I think that just in Multiverse of Madness, they just thought it would be a cool Easter egg to say, and they didn't realize it had been previously established. So I think they really are. I mean, the fact that we have so many different characters. I mean, we see the original cartoon Spider-Man. We see the spectacular Spider-Man cartoon version. We see the video game version. We see live action versions. There are comic hints and inspirations there. I mean, Gwen's universe is Earth 65. That's what she's from. I think that was just a goof up, and I think that, you know, this, I think everything's just all one big fucking thing.
Right. Okay. I think we're having a little bit of confusion because what I'm saying is I just don't think that the comic multiverse and this multiverse are connected. But I do think that like every other fucking like animated video game, cinematic, everything else is its own multiverse. And I think that in itself is super exciting.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah. Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if it's either way though, honestly.
Yeah. But like, I mean, the spot fucking goes into the Venom world for a minute.
That's true. Yeah.
I was actually really excited by that. Did you think they were going to show Tom Hardy?
I did think for a second, but no, I mean, yeah. They clearly didn't.
Yeah, yeah. So they went into that Lego universe too. And did you want to say something about that too?
Yes. So that Lego sequence was actually animated by a 14-year-old, which is crazy.
I know.
The person's name is Preston Mutanga, and he apparently recreated the first trailer for Across the Spider-Verse in Lego, and the directors were so impressed with his work, they asked him to animate this section of the actual movie, which is insane! Can you imagine a 14-year-old and being a part of, like, of making this movie?
That's fucking incredible, yeah. And that part was so great, like, especially when he goes and uses the communicator and he goes, boop, boop, right?
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. Everyone laughed real hard at that part too. And it's funny because like the Spot's face is sort of proportionate to what a human's face would be to a Lego world.
Yes.
You know? I love that sequence. It's just so cool that it's like everything. Like, were you excited to see the video game people like in the movie?
Yes, I was excited. Yeah, because you even hear the Insomniac Spider-Man's voice speak like a line or two. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty cool. Yeah, just all the callbacks are great. I was a little underwhelmed by the previously used footage of the live action people. Now I'm like, that kind of. And I heard that they intended to film some like full live action scenes, but they felt it was excessive and it just wasn't worth it to do, so they scrapped it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they felt like they can get the point across with the previous footage better.
Yeah,
but yeah, I'm like, you know, seeing that them in there was not nearly as exciting as seeing them in No Way Home to me.
Right. I feel the exact same way. Yeah. And so that kind of brings up something I was kind of curious about and how you thought too. You mentioned before that you were a big fan of the Indian Spider-Man in this, an Indian Spider-Man comic. In that sequence, which I thought was really great, right? Well, Mumbatan, right, is where they go.
Yeah.
I thought that sequence was just like so exciting to watch. He was such a great character. In that sequence, there's like a captain who's like the father of his like girlfriend.
Captain Singh, yep.
Yeah, right. And he's about to get crushed at one point, but then they're able to save him. Miles saves him, actually. And that disrupts canon. Were you kind of confused as to like how that worked?
No, it made sense. I mean, we know what canon means in comic speak. You know, it just means what's established in the backstory. You know, so it's basically like a form of destiny. You know, it's like this was supposed to happen, and if you don't let it happen, it's going to supremely fuck things up down the line.
Right.
And then which they explain later with Spider-Man 2099's own experiences in the multiverse.
Right. I mean, that's a good point too, but do you feel like they clearly delineated between like, okay, well, you're going to have this event that's like your Uncle Ben, and then you're going to have this event that's like a Captain Stacy?
Yeah, that was something I felt was a little weird. I mean, and it's weird that I felt that way because there always is an Uncle Ben type sacrifice in the Spider-Man's life. And I feel like that's normal and makes sense. But right. That there's always a captain felt a little underwhelming to me, I guess.
Yeah, maybe.
And I know, like, obviously, this Captain Stacy dies in a lot of continuities, and you know, Miles' dad died in at least the Spider-Man video PS4 video game. I think in the original Ultimate Universe too. I can't remember which one. One of them died in the Ultimate Universe, and then they came back when he moved to 616. I don't remember.
The mom.
It was the mom. Yeah, you're right.
The mom was killed by Venom in the Ultimate Universe.
Yeah, there you go. So, I know that the death of Captain Stacy is like a huge Spider-Man arc, and I get that, but it doesn't have the same impact to me as the Uncle Ben role, you know?
Right, exactly. And I think that you could easily say, well, you know, Miles lost his uncle, the Prowler, too. So that's like his Uncle Ben moment, right?
Yeah.
But then it's like, yeah, there always has to be a captain that dies. And so, it works, I guess. And it really does set up this idea of like, he's got to go save his father. Like, it's all about him just going to save his dad. And his dad can't become the captain. And I like that little loophole where Gwen goes back to her world and then she finds out that her dad quit the force, basically, like as soon as he found out that she was Spider-Woman, right?
Yeah.
So like essentially if Miles can get his dad to, you know, not become the captain, then he can prevent his death.
Yeah.
Do you think that the dad will die in the next one?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Ditto.
You gotta save him. I mean, it's the whole goal.
Yeah, yeah.
They have to come to some understanding. I mean, they set everything up. This is what we mentioned before, how it felt, how the ending felt a little much, and how why people were disappointed is they set up so much, and I don't know how much more is going to happen in the next movie that they're going to fill another approximately two hours, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it seems like they're all poised to kind of get to where the end and have the climax. They only needed another 30 minutes or 40 minutes maybe or something like that, you know?
That's a good point.
That's why I think it feels so frustrating that it ended where it ended.
Yeah. Really, really good point. I mean, we can kind of speculate now like what the third part might be, because the third one's called Beyond the Spider-Verse. And at first I was thinking, like, I was like, oh, well, how do you go beyond the fucking multiverse in a movie? And then I think that the way that they set this up, it's like essentially it's a world that doesn't have Spider-Man. So that's how it's kind of like beyond, because he's in a world where there's no Spider-Man. I'm thinking that maybe because they mention a Sinister Six, like in the newscast you overhear when he's in that world. And I was thinking that maybe like Gwen's team goes there and they have to fight like a Sinister Six that is sort of a, like a more beefed up.
But the problem with that is they've already set up that the spot is on his way to go ruin Miles' life in his universe in the middle of the movie.
Right.
So it seems like it's like what are they going to they need to address that as the movie starts, essentially, or you know, like there needs to be something beyond that. I mean, maybe they do stop the spot and it causes some other catastrophe and the world starts falling apart. And that's what the final climax is about. Is about, you know, the world ending or something like that, and then stopping the world ending.
Yeah. Hmm. I don't know. I mean, I wonder.
They also need to have kind of have Miguel come around to thinking differently about Miles. You know, he's not going to be a straight up villain 100%.
No, I agree. So you bring up a really good point about the spot, and then also this sort of side world, right? Because in a way, it is like The Empire Strikes Back in the sense that like Miles being in this other world that has no Spider-Man, that's kind of like the equivalent of like Han getting put in carbonite and going to Jabba's palace. It's like, okay, well, we need to like fix this before we fix the much bigger problem, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like maybe the stuff that's in this other world isn't like the center stage big stuff, because you do have the spot, like you said. And probably the whole trilogy ends with some kind of battle with Miles in the spot. And somehow I think the spot will sort of be returned to normal. And maybe Miles will have to do some kind of sacrifice. I don't know. I mean, maybe like the Miles that's in that, who's the Prowler in this other world, maybe he'll like become a good guy in that world, you know, and then there will be a Spider-Man there. I don't know, to kind of fix that anomaly, you know?
Yeah. Maybe that's entirely possible. But I think that the point this movie drives home is that this is Miles' story and that he can do both. So both has to happen. He has to be able to save the world and his dad. So that 100% has to happen because he said it.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. And let me ask you this. Do you think that by the end of the third movie, that might be like a doorway into Miles being in the MCU?
I've heard that Beyond the Spider-Verse is the end of this version of Miles.
Okay.
So yeah. I think they definitely should bring Miles over to the MCU or to live action. I don't know the best way to do it though. It's all the legal stuff is so weird, and you know, just Tom Holland being in limbo. And also, just his age in general, you know, like he's just starting college essentially in the MCU. So I guess that's where he was in Ultimate Spider-Man too, though, when Miles first shows up. So I guess it could kind of work, but yeah. I don't think that the MCU is done with Peter Parker yet.
No.
And I feel like they would save a live action Miles. I would feel like they give some breathing room to avoid direct comparisons to this movie.
Yeah.
And then to kind of pass the torch of Spider-Man as a legacy character when Tom Holland is like done.
Yeah. I think that Sony itself, they always kind of have this feeling of like, oh no, we're going to come out on top. We're going to actually like get our Spider-Man universe going. Like, I think they have a lot of faith in their like Kraven movie that's coming out, and in Venom 3.
I'm kind of interested in what they're going to do with this Madame Web movie. They're putting a lot of characters into that movie that are kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, one thing that's interesting to me is that when Miguel goes to explain the multiverse and like the way the situation works to Miles, the very first image you see is like that kind of strand of energy that they use in Loki, where there's like the divergent timelines. He's like, this is everything. This is reality. And then they almost make it like the web of Spider-Man kind of connects all the realities. Did you kind of notice that, or was that your take on it? Right. Yeah. And so that, like, because what was interesting about the original Spider-Verse storyline in the comics was that it was kind of going parallel to Secret Wars. You know, and with Secret Wars, all the worlds were ending, and, you know, it was all coming together in Battle World for Doctor Doom and everything like that. And I wonder if, like, Sony and Marvel, that's kind of what they're trying to do.
If they're doing that, if they're going to try and connect it in that sense, I think, I don't know, because aren't the movies that we're assuming are going to be, like, Secret Wars are, like, 2025 and beyond?
Yeah. No, I know.
Isn't that a, like, bit of a, if this movie is supposed to come out next year and that's movie's going to come out a year or two later, I don't know if that works. Maybe it's not that long of a time.
Yeah, because one result of Secret Wars, like one Secret Wars all over in the comics, the Ultimate Universe is gone and Spider-Man, Miles Morales, is in the regular Marvel Universe.
Very true. Very true.
So
I imagine that Sony is not going to want to give up Miles like that so easily.
Yeah. Well, when I was listening to you know, Mr. Sunday, you know, James and Mason talking, they were saying that, like, it'd be kind of cool if we ever see a new story of Miles that he's just kind of doing, like, street level things, or, like, not end of the world multiverse crazy cataclysm stuff, but, like, much more grounded adventures. I'd be all down for that.
Yeah, I think at the same time, though, it's hard to go back to those things.
Right.
Once you've done these, you know, hugely emotional, crazy world-ending story arcs,
yeah,
and how they've done it in these feel right. It's big, but it's also personal.
Yeah,
like it's like the best of both worlds in terms of, you know, because every comic event has to be bigger and more crazy than the last.
Right.
And if it's not, it's underwhelming. But often they have to kind of go too far, and it's kind of ridiculous. But so far, these two movies have felt like the right mix of it, you know, personal tales and then, you know, big world ending events.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. I guess we'll see, you know, what happens. It is March when the next one comes out, so.
I'm still curious if they'll hit that date or not.
Okay. Yeah. I hope they do. I
don't want to wait.
Yeah. So with that being said,
let me clarify that. I want them to take their time and craft the movie that needs to be crafted.
Right.
But
right.
Don't rush just to get it out, to hit a date, finish what you got to do, and, you know, whatever. But I want to see it as soon as possible.
Well, I feel like if the third one was still being worked on in the sense of, like, they were making the story and stuff, I think that, like, they would have said, oh, the writer's strike has affected Spider-Verse, right?
Very true.
So I feel like it's a sort of like a Matrix Revolutions, Back to the Future Part 3 kind of scenario.
Yeah. I hope you're right.
Yeah. All right. Well, then why don't we go ahead and jump to our rankings? Are you cool with that?
Yep.
All right. Nice. So just to clarify for our audience, when we do these rankings, we're just doing the sort of Spider-Man multiverse movies and not any movies where it's like Spider-Man and the Avengers. Like, so not doing it like Infinity War or Civil War or anything like that. We're just doing the Tobey Maguire movies, the Andrew Garfield movies, and the Tom Holland movies.
Yeah. In other words, a spider character has to be front and center in the movie.
Well put. Yeah. So do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first. I mean, it's funny because we just did this like a week ago or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So for me, the bottom of the list is Let There Be Carnage. I kind of alluded to that, you know, how much worse that movie looks after seeing the spot in this movie.
Right.
Then we have Venom at 11, Amazing Spider-Man 2 at 10, Spider-Man 3 at 9, Spider-Man Far From Home. Eddie, you know what? I'm going to flip that. I'm going to put Spider-Man 3 above Spider-Man Far From Home. I'm going to do that live as we do this year. I'm flipping that. So number 9 is Far From Home, and number 8 is Spider-Man 3. I think it does get a bad rap. There are some bad things, but there are some good things. Number 7 is Spider-Man Homecoming. Number 6 is Amazing Spider-Man. Then we have Spider-Man 2, and then Spider-Man, the Tobey Maguire. At number three, I have Across the Spider-Verse. So right now I have that below Into the Spider-Verse, and I feel like I have to put the disclaimer out there that that could very easily change once I see Beyond the Spider-Verse. I feel like this is an incomplete story, and it's hard to rank it. And number two is Into the Spider-Verse. And I think that is such a complete and amazing movie that it's hard to process it competing against half a story.
Okay.
And then at number one, I still have Spider-Man No Way Home. Although, as I said last time, I could flip those or call them equal. I think I did call them equal. Screw that. They're both number one equally to me.
Okay. So, okay.
There you go.
Multiverse Spider-Man movies. Okay. 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 So my list hasn't changed at all, except that the only thing I would change on it, not to go through all the rankings, but is that I would put this one just underneath Into the Spider-Verse, because pretty much exactly what you said, it's a complete movie by itself. And like it just sort of emotionally hits all the beats, and it didn't feel long. It felt like just the right length. Actually, yep. Moves at a very like quick clip, that one too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Have you seen Rise of the Beast yet?
No, I'm seeing it on Saturday. Okay. Part of me wants to go like right now, honestly.
Yes.
Because obviously Transformers is my thing. As I point behind me to my many Transformers.
Yes.
But I'm going to, I have a tradition that I've done with everything except Bumblebee.
Yeah.
Is that I've gone to the IMAX in Lincoln Center.
Yeah.
In New York City. Which is one of the largest screens in the world. I think it is the largest screen in this hemisphere.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay. So I'm going Saturday to that screen. The screen is like bigger than a house. It's like it's like 125 feet tall and like 75 feet wide or something like that. It's nuts. It is absolutely nuts. And I've seen every movie there. Not the first screening, but I've seen every movie except Bumblebee, because the last night was so bad for me.
Yeah.
And it killed my whole vibe. And I still can't figure out if I saw Bumblebee in the theater or not.
Yeah.
I remember buying a ticket. I remember that my son was still very young. We had a babysitter. I remember something happening, and that I was sitting in the car, and my wife wasn't going to go because of something happening. And I was sitting in the car. I'm like, should I go? And I decided not to. So, I don't know if we didn't see it after that. I don't remember. I have this weird thing that if I don't see a movie in the first weekend, I generally don't see it in the theater. I don't know why that happens. It's just like if I don't do it immediately, and it's not like I don't do it on purpose.
Right.
It's something just blocks me from ever seeing it in the theater. I don't know why.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting. I did see Bumblebee in the theater. I think I saw it twice. I actually did not see the last night. I haven't seen it yet. So
wait, I didn't know. Oh, really?
Yeah. Really? I haven't. I've seen like some clips.
Watch it and so you can know the disappointment.
I don't know. I'm good. I know that there's like this one part where Anthony Hopkins is like, "You want to know, don't you, dude?" Or he says something like really stupid like that. And I know he gets like blown up and he like flies through the air at one point too. I've seen that stupid shit.
Yeah, there's a lot of this. Oh man, that's it's funny too, because I think, because I actually do like Mark Wahlberg in the movies.
Yeah,
and I actually, and the female lead in the movie is Laura Haddock, who is Star-Lord's mom. Right. And I actually think she's really good and really likable.
Yeah.
But God.
Well, the reason why we're talking. Go ahead.
Just the fact that even I can't defend that movie says a lot to me.
Well, you know, the reason why me and Brian are even talking about The Last Night or any of these Transformers movies is because next week's video is we're covering Transformers Rise of the Beasts. And I'm sorry, Brian, but I'm actually going to go see it tonight. So so I'm going to see it in a couple hours. But have you looked at social media at all? And heard anybody's react? What's that?
Trying not to.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I won't spoil anything for you then. But what do you call it? We're going to talk about that next week, and we'll see if we liked it or not. I'm saying optimistic about Optimus. But anyway, we're going to go and do that. And then the week after that is The Flash. So another thing to look forward to. Yeah. Very busy month of June.
Crazy 3 weeks of movies.
Yes, yes. But if you guys haven't liked and subscribed, please do and join the conversation. Let us know what you thought about Across the Spider-Verse. We'll see y'all.